that type of ceasefire whose terms are beneficial to the resistance. They may not get 100% of what they're asking for, but they will get enough where it humiliates the Zionist regime and secures a victory for their people, and the death of all these martyrs will not go in vain.
And on that note, I thank both of you for being with us here on the Spotlight. Yves Engler, author and political activist out of Montreal. Ali Salam, editor-in-chief of Basira Press out of Tehran. And thank you for being with us on another Spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashimi, signing off for myself and all the crew right here in Tehran. Goodbye.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily via the internet address www.parstoday.com/en. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Intelsat 902, and Eutelsat satellite, as well as via internet. You can also listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for more details.
Here, we enlighten you with the Ayah 61 of Surah Yunus, recited by Ahmad Mirzad Vaghifi.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. Bismillahir rahmanir rahim. Wa ma takunu fi sha'ni wa ma tatlu. وَمَا تَتْلُو مِنْهُ مِنْ قُرْآنٍ وَلَا تَعْمَلُونَ مِنْ عَمَلٍ إِلَّا كُنَّا عَلَيْكُمْ شُهُودًا وما يعزب عن ربك من مثقال ذرة في الأرض وما يعزب عن ربك من مثقال ذرة في الأرض ولا في السماء ولا أصغر من من ذلك ولا أصغر من ذلك ولا أكبر إلا في كتاب مبين وما يعزب عن ربك من مثقال ذرة في الأرض ولا في السماء ولا أصغر من ذلك ولا أصغر من ذلك ولا أكبر إلا في كتاب مبين صدق الله العلي العظيم.
In the name of God, the most gracious, the most compassionate. And you are not engaged in any affair, nor do you recite concerning it any portion of the Quran, nor do you do any work, but we are witnesses over you when you enter into it. And there does not lie concealed from your Lord the weight of an atom in the earth, or in the heaven, nor anything less than that, nor greater, but it is in a clear book.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Israel forces once again kill Gazans waiting for aid as regime's indiscriminate attacks claim more civilian lives across the blockaded territory. A UN expert says Israel's launched a starvation campaign against Palestinians in Gaza by destroying the territory's food system. And the Islamic resistance in Iraq targets Israel's military barracks at Rosh Pina Airport in north of occupied territories in support of Gaza.
Hello everyone, thank you for joining us here on World News.
Now it's over 5 months into Israel's genocidal war on Gaza, and the regime's indiscriminate attacks continue claiming more civilian lives. In one of the latest attacks, at least 10 Palestinians were massacred and several others wounded after Israeli forces bombed two homes in Deir Abala in central Gaza, most of the victims women and children. Separately, at least two people were killed and dozens injured, some critically, when Israeli forces fired at aid seekers at Al-Nabulsi and Al-Kuwait roundabouts in Gaza City. Meanwhile, at least one civilian was killed and three others injured by Israeli bombing on a home in Jabalia, northern Gaza. Israeli genocide has so far killed 30,800 Palestinians, most of them women and children. Thousands of others have also gone missing and are presumed dead under rubble. Joining us now from the Gaza city of Deir al-Bala is Moti Abu Musabit for more on the ground there in the besieged enclave. Hello, Moti. Hope you are safe and doing well there, my friend. What can you tell us today?
Yes, actually, the Israeli occupation forces are still decimating Gaza Strip with more airstrikes, inflicting more destruction, more bloodshed, and damage to the Palestinian territories here. Over the last night, the Israeli warplanes destroyed two residential buildings in Deir al-Balah city, particularly Al-Hikr neighborhood located in the southern part of Deir al-Balah city. At least nine Palestinian civilians, mostly women and children, were reportedly killed, while dozens are still trapped and missing under the rubble. while the eastern parts of Deir el-Balah city were subjected to heavy bombardments of the Israeli artillery that maintained shelling those areas all the night. And when it comes to the southern part of the Gaza Strip, particularly Khan Yunis and Rafah, they were under heavy bombardments as the Israeli warplanes continued and maintained their airstrikes against the residential buildings, particularly the eastern part of Khan Yunis and Rafah. In the meantime, according to the eyewitnesses from the eastern part of Khan Yunis city, that unbelievable destruction unfolded in the eastern part of the city after the Israeli occupation forces withdrew from those parts, particularly and mainly Abasan and Al-Karara neighborhoods. The people could barely identify and know their homes and their houses and their residential areas, because they are witnessing unbelievable and unprecedented destruction and devastation that reached everything in that area. In Gaza City, also the Israeli warplanes renewed and maintained their airstrikes, particularly against Al-Zaytun neighborhood. Another residential building was bombed and destroyed by the Israeli warplanes. In the meantime, the Israeli warplanes also continued their airstrikes and incursions against the northern part of Gaza Strip as more residential buildings and houses were destroyed in Jabalia and Beit Lahia town in the northern part of the Gaza Strip. On the ground, the Israeli war of starvation is still continued against the Palestinian people as the Israeli occupation forces once again opened their gunfire towards the Palestinian civilians who were gathering near Annabulsi roundabout in the western part of Gaza City, waiting for the humanitarian relief to reach Gaza. Once again, in the same place, under the same circumstances, the Israeli occupation forces committed another massacre. It's worth mentioning that the Israeli occupation forces killed at least 120 Palestinian civilians in that place after opening the gunfire towards them while they were waiting for the humanitarian relief heading to Gaza Strip over the last week. Since that time, till this moment, the Israeli occupation forces have never stopped their attacks against those Palestinian people. They are doing everything to prevent the Palestinian civilians from having any access to those basic humanitarian aid and relief, knowing that the Palestinian civilians there are dying of hunger as they do not have anything to eat, particularly in the northern part of Gaza Strip and Gaza City. Over to you.
All right, thank you, Moti. We will talk to you soon. Stay safe. Moti Abu Musaba, they're updating us from on the ground at Deir el-Balah in the besieged Gaza Strip. Meanwhile, a UN expert says Israel is destroying Gaza's food system as part of the regime's broader starvation campaign in its genocidal war. Now, Michael Fakhri, the UN Special Rapporteur on the Right to Food, was addressing the Human Rights Council. He said destroying Gaza's food system runs along with Israel's restrictions on humanitarian aid deliveries into the enclave. Fakhri said Israel has mounted its starvation campaign by even targeting small-scale fishermen, destroying around 80% of Gaza's fishing sector. Meanwhile, report by rights group Action Aid International says women in Gaza are giving birth to stillborn babies due to malnutrition and a collapse of humanitarian operations. It said many children have also died at hospitals due to malnutrition. And now let's listen to comments by some Palestinian parents and medics explaining how malnutrition is affecting their children in Gaza.
There is no proper food for the mothers, especially in the recent period, as we noticed that since December until today, there are no babies with normal weights. Most of them are from 2 kilograms to 2.5. We stopped seeing babies weighing 3 kilograms as in the recent period. The last 4 months since October until today, there is no nutrition for mothers. There is no meat, milk, eggs, fruits or vegetables.
I'm a mom who lost her son due to malnutrition, due to circumstances we're going through in Gaza, in a school inside a 3-meter tent right in front of toilets. What are you expecting from a sick child living in such conditions? How can he get better?
Yazan al-Kafarna, who passed away, was displaced from the north, and he originally had issues with his muscles, but his health was acceptable. He used to receive proper treatment and healthy food, but with the lack of food after the war began, he got worse.
The Islamic resistance in Iraq has launched a new attack against Israeli targets in occupied territories in support of the Palestinians in Gaza. The Iraqi resistance says it carried out a drone attack on military barracks at Rosh Pina Airport in northern occupied territories. This after they targeted Israel's Kiryat Shemona Airport with a drone. And earlier in the week, the Haifa was also targeted twice. The port of Haifa, which the resistance hit a chemical factory and a power station also with drones. Now, the Islamic resistance in Iraq says it will continue these attacks on Israeli targets until the regime stops its genocide in Gaza. It's also been striking major American military bases in both Syria and Iraq over Washington's support for Israel's onslaught on Gaza. U.S. President Joe Biden has addressed Congress in his State of the Union speech. He touched on Israel's genocidal war, stressing the importance of allowing humanitarian aid into the besieged territory. Have a listen.
Israel must allow more aid into Gaza to ensure humanitarian workers aren't caught in the crossfire. They're announcing they're going to have a crossing in northern Gaza. The leadership of Israel, I say this, humanitarian assistance cannot be a secondary consideration or a bargaining chip.
As Biden was speaking, some audience members held placards calling for a ceasefire in Gaza and a stop to weapons deliveries to Israel. Outside, there were similar calls with protesters gathering and waving Palestinian flags and expressing anger at Biden for supporting the Gaza genocide. His administration has been lending all-out support to the Israeli regime, from giving it weapons and money to blocking UN Security Council resolutions calling for a Gaza ceasefire. A new report by the Washington Post reveals U.S. has quietly made over 100 weapon sales to Israel since the Gaza war began in early October, and that's besides the hundreds of millions of dollars of sales of weapons to Israel that Biden initiated with no congressional approval. Political analyst William Jones out of Washington, D.C. believes Biden will continue supporting the Gaza genocide despite all the consequences for him personally, even in the upcoming presidential race.
He is really in trouble with the support that he's given to Israel. It has alienated a significant part of his own party, not only the Arab vote, but also many ordinary Americans who aren't of Arab or Palestinian heritage, who have been just totally shocked by the amount of deaths, by the genocidal conflict that Mr. Netanyahu is conducting in Gaza. He's just not willing to confront the Israelis there. I mean, all of this has to do, I think, with the election. On the one hand, if he plays hardball with Netanyahu, then the Zionist lobby here in the United States is going to become is going to be upset with him, and he'll have trouble in that area of possible voting. But if he doesn't do something, at least make the effort to try and assuage and to bring down this crisis, he'll also have people in his own party who won't be going out to vote for him. So he's playing a very dangerous game here. But I think the upshot of it is that he is not willing to stop a genocidal war in Gaza. And therefore, as you mentioned, and I think is quite true, the United States is therefore holds responsibility for the deaths that are ongoing in Gaza today.
Now, ceasefire talks in Cairo between Hamas and Israel have ended with no breakthrough. Negotiations are reportedly set to resume next week, but hopes are dim for results, especially before the holy Muslim month of Ramadan. Earlier in our explainer program, we discussed this issue in detail.
Now, there's a real push for a temporary ceasefire or a temporary truce to take place before Ramadan when it comes to the U.S.-Israel genocidal aggression. The U.S. and the Israeli regime, while giving the impression that they are after a ceasefire, are still continuing with the genocidal war full steam ahead, as if punishing the Palestinian side to succumb to their terms. Now, at this point, Hamas has received the draft proposal of the deal and has agreed to some of the terms. Now, taking a look at the first stage in terms of what it would cover. Well, based on the ceasefire, which in the first stage is going to take place, The time frame is 40 days. In order for that to happen, both parties need to stop their military operations completely, including Israel's aerial reconnaissance operations over the Gaza Strip, and for it to stop for 8 hours a day. Then comes the issue of detainees, which has been one of the toughest issues actually to resolve. Now, there has been an agreement on what types of Israeli captives will be released. Taking a look at what was agreed upon, you have women, children under the age of 19, the elderly, aged 50 years and above, and the sick, which will be exchanged. Those are the categories. The ratio, now that's something that needed some convincing on the Hamas side, which it appears it has settled for one. The exchange would be, in terms of the ratio, 10 to 1, okay? And that's pretty important. There are 134 captives. There's been an agreement for 40 Israeli captives to be released. So when you take a look at the number of Israeli captives based on the ratio of 10 to 1, obviously 10 times more equals 400, the number of Palestinian prisoners which will need to be released. Now keep in mind that this ratio was 3 to 1 in the previous truce. Israel has said if more than 40 are released, more days will be added to the ceasefire. And that's an important point. Now this ratio is important due to the number of Palestinian prisoners that Israel has languishing in their jails. It's good to have a reminder of that. Israel has about 13,000 Palestinian prisoners. How do we get to that total? Well, before the aggression, you had 5,000 that were languishing in the jails. And then since October 7th, you have, 8,000? Obviously, the grand total there being 13,000 Palestinian prisoners. So this somewhat actually gives the appearance that it's detaining Palestinians to give it more bargaining power. Well, not to the issue of Israeli regime forces withdrawal and the return of Palestinians. After commencing the first phase, Israel is set to reposition its forces away from the densely populated areas in the Gaza Strip. Once something like that happens, again, if there's a ceasefire, temporary one at that, which will be agreed upon, then you have Palestinians, which will then have a right to gradually return to what is said to be the northern part of the Gaza Strip. Now, there's a precondition there, except men of military service, which are aged above to the northern Gaza Strip. Now, on the humanitarian side, there is a big need for aid supplies. The commitment that's being made, and this is at a minimal in order to provide for the needs of Palestinians, you're looking at 500 trucks a daily of humanitarian aid. Now, the current number is way below the required amount, ranging from none to tens of trucks. There's also commitment to provide tents, 200,000 of them is what's been hashed out, and also for caravans, looking at the number to be 60,000 for that. One of the snags to hit the deal is that Israel wants a list of captives to find out who is actually dead or alive, but Hamas says it would first need a halt to the aggression. Now, the Hamas Political Bureau member, Basim Naim, this is what he has said. It is impossible to know exactly who is still alive and who has been killed. That's very logical. Another thing that he has said in terms of the demand that Israel has made, these captives are in different areas with different groups, different resistance groups in the Gaza Strip. So that's another reason why that list has not been released. And then finally, he has said, we have called for a ceasefire, okay, in order to be able to collect the data. So these are all very logical stances that Hamas has taken on that request and demand by Israel. Well, the latest is that the United States is preparing a new ceasefire resolution to submit to the UN Security Council. In it, what it has backed is an immediate ceasefire of which it would last 6 weeks in duration. Also, the release of all captives, it's all for that, obviously, and the support of the ongoing negotiations on the ground. Linda Thomas-Greenfield, the U.S. ambassador to the U.N., is circulating this text to then be officially submitted. Now, the U.S. hypocrisy, however, is in full display when it comes to Palestinians that are getting killed, for example, from a lack of food and medicine. Why? Well, check out this most recent entry, which reveals U.S. hypocrisy when it comes to military assistance. Just came out yesterday. U.S. has quietly approved more than 100 weapons package for Israel, amounting to thousands of munitions since the onslaught began. Thousands of these bombs the U.S. has approved, somewhat without making any noise about it. Next up, the veto, as you saw, three of them by the U.N. And then this, the U.S. request for a ceasefire, well, it's not a permanent one. So we can see that that's something Hamas is requiring, but the U.S. is only opting for a not a permanent ceasefire, which puts, again, U.S. hypocrisy at play.
And that's it for your latest, everyone. Thank you for joining us here on World News.
Thank you. When the whole world is silent towards oppression, even one voice becomes powerful. IRIB English Radio, the voice of the voiceless. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en.
Supplication on Fridays. In the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. Praise belongs to Allah, the first before the bringing forth and the giving of life, and the last after the annihilation of all things. The All-Knowing who forgets not him who remembers him, and decreases not him who thanks him, and disappoints not him who supplicates him, and cuts not off the hope of him who hopes in him. O Allah, I call thee to witness, and thou art sufficient witness, and I call to witness all thy angels, and the inhabitants of thy heavens, and the bearers of thy throne, and thy prophets and thy messengers whom thou hast sent out, and the various kinds of creatures thou hast brought forth, that I bear witness that thou art Allah. There is no God but thou, thou alone, who hast no associate nor any equal, and thy word has no failing nor any change. And that Muhammad, Allah bless him and his household, is thy servant and thy messenger. He delivered to the servants that with which thou charged him, and he struggled for Allah as is his due. And he gave the good news of the truth of reward, and he warned of the veracity of punishment. O Allah, make me firm in thy religion as long as thou keepst me alive, and make not my heart to swerve after thou hast guided me, and give me mercy from thee. Surely thou art the giver. Bless Muhammad and the household of Muhammad, and make me one of his followers and his partisans, and muster me in his band, and give me the success of accomplishing the obligatory observance of Friday, and performing the acts of obedience which thou hast made incumbent upon me within it, and receiving the bestowal which thou hast apportioned for its people on the day of recompense. Thou, only thou, art the mighty ones.
The limelight.
As the U.S. ambassador to the U.N. recently made clear in a rare moment of honesty, Washington is fully committed to facilitating the Zionist regime's destruction of the Palestinians. Regarding this issue, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for the first part, please. Middle East Eye wrote, "There are times when it makes sense, for the sake of one's mental health, to simply ignore the boilerplate platitudes of politicians and official representatives, and other times when a strict attention must be paid. In the case of the U.S. regime, given the truly dismal level of its official discourse at this point, it has become harder to tell the difference. As the president himself is unsure of whether Ukraine, Iraq, Mexico, or Egypt might be in question on any given day, or on those very rare days when he actually takes a question or two from a mostly stenographic and domesticated press corps, it has become easier and easier to just stop paying attention and simply write all of it off as subterfuge and nonsense meant to add yet another layer to the iron wall protecting the Zionist regime's genocidal actions. And yet, there are those rare moments when one official or another actually says what they mean and reveals how policies intend to proceed. Following discussion and the scathing response by the Russia's UN ambassador, Vasily Nebenzia, to last week's reprehensible and criminal U.S. veto of the Algerian resolution for an immediate ceasefire in Gaza, the U.S. ambassador to the UN, Linda Thomas-Greenfield, offered a very brief press conference. In conclusion, she stressed the importance of direct diplomacy on the ground until we reach a final solution. The thrust of this, of course, is that there could be no immediate ceasefire since the delicacies of direct diplomacy might be disturbed. In other words, let the horrors continue, come what may, and let the rest of the world be damned, as the US regime and its few remaining allies buy more time for the child killer regime of Israel to achieve its purported goals. Through the fog of propaganda, disinformation, and all kinds of coercion, not to mention the huge UN veto stick wielded by the US regime, can there still be any doubt about what those goals actually are? As the overturned window of what has become normalized continues to expand exponentially on the ground in Gaza, it would be difficult not to understand the intent of Thomas Greenfield's phrase, final solution, and the whiplash sense of cognitive dissonance it was meant to inflict. The Gaza Weapons Testing, Population Control and Surveillance Lab, open to global consumers since at least 2007, and the Zionist regime's imposition of a total blockade on the Gaza Strip has clearly moved into a new phase. While there are instrumental political implications of great import in this new phase, there is as well a direct affront to our every sense of what it still might mean to be human in the digital age of immediate global communication, an almost full lockstep consolidation and docility of mainstream Western media sources. What are we to make of the U.S. enabling of the relentless Zionist regime killing and destruction machine, along with the almost unfathomable daily cruelty accompanying it? Is it simply in order to kill and terrorize as many Palestinians as possible, particularly children and women? Is it to destroy all existing institutions and structures? roads, water systems, power stations, agricultural capacities, homes, schools, universities, hospitals, libraries, mosques, churches, bookstores, bakeries, pharmacies, and even so-called designated safe zones to the point of making Gaza completely uninhabitable? Or is it in order to take over and exploit the offshore gas fields that Palestinians have a right to benefit from but have never been given access to? Might there also be other messages directed at the world? In the days immediately following Thomas Greenfield's delaying tactic of yet another U.S. veto to a ceasefire solution and her final solution utterance, Israeli occupation forces built a road cutting northern Gaza off from the south, while bombing UNRWA facilities and a Doctors Without Borders staff shelter. Food and medicine supplies continue to be blocked and stalled by Zionist occupation forces. Following one of the first recorded cases of an infant dying from starvation, 10,000 more children are in imminent danger of starving from malnutrition, and after them, of course, many more children and elderly are likely to follow. Some half a million people are close to famine in northern Gaza, even as Israeli regime snipers strafe Palestinians desperately trying to reach the little aid that trickles in. With a precise level of genocidal cruelty that becomes ever more evident, the Zionist regime forces carried out precision strikes in Beit Lahia and Jabalia to destroy rescue and sanitation machinery and vehicles. This has increased the chance of disease spreading in those areas, while forcing residents to search through the rubble for survivors or the bodies and body parts of loved ones with only their hands and basic tools, even further exhausting the already malnourished. At the same time, Egypt, inexplicably not yet having torn up its peace agreement with the child killer regime of Israel, continues apace in building some vaguely referred to area in the Sinai Desert at the border with Rafah. Most recently, the Zionist regime's Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu released his first sufficiently vague post-assault plan for control of Gaza. Meanwhile, many Zionists remain displaced. The economy has taken a serious hit, and other than pure destruction and death, things are not going so well on the ground regarding Netanyahu's purported aims of the assault, repatriating Israeli hostages and destroying the resistance movement Hamas. How, at this point, can anyone doubt that mass expulsion is not only possible but plausible? And as both occupation and settler raiders continue their deadly rampages throughout the West Bank and Al-Quds, can anyone still seriously doubt the possibility of the actual destruction of the Al-Aqsa Mosque, something constantly alluded to and even gleefully taught in some Zionist regime's schools? Clearly, the surround sound blather spouted by various political figures is one of the prime means to contain our imagination, to refer to things only within certain parameters, making other things unthinkable, unimaginable, even as they stare us directly in the face.
Choose to think better. Welcome to a better you. IRIB English Radio. Thank you.
visit us at parstoday.ir/en.
Midstream. On Friday, March 1, Arab aircrafts conducted an airdrop of aid in the northern areas of the Gaza Strip for the first time. However, the hopes of that evening ended with men returning empty-handed. Contrary to the desires of families, yet at least they returned unharmed, unlike the hundreds gunned down by Zionist Israel while trying to get to the aid packages. The first planes appeared in the sky over Jabalia camp in the northern part of the strip and began dropping aid shipments over it. However, the winds did not favor the thousands of displaced people who raised their heads to the sky, anticipating the drop of relief materials among them, but it ended up landing actually on the beach. During the journey from the heart of Jabalia to the northern outskirts to obtain as much aid as possible, tens of thousands of locals marched on foot, covering a distance of over 3 kilometers. When the crowds arrived, the shipments had already been completely emptied, since thousands of residents of that area where the aid fell were waiting for it before it even touched the ground. Those who managed to obtain a bag of flour or a kilogram of dates or a bottle of water reached the outskirts of the camp with their hands and feet bruised from the intense competition and jostling to get even a little to alleviate their hunger and thirst. However, the airdropped food packages did not exceed the payload of half a truck. The information printed on those products indicates that they are sourced from charitable organizations closely associated with the Egyptian army, which raises many questions, on top of which is, why is Egypt airdropping food aid when they can open the borders and let in thousands of trucks per day? Gazans took to social media to vent their frustration at the humiliating manner in which they were treated by the countries that dropped such aid. It is only reasonable for them to be angered by this humiliating act after they lived the horror of the night before, now forever known as the Flour Massacre. The massacre that began on Thursday, February 29, with the journey of hundreds of thousands of men, elderly, women, and young girls who walked towards the Nablus intersection located on Rashid Street, west of Gaza City, where the entrance gate for aid trucks from the south of the strip to the north is located. There, hundreds of thousands of hungry people gathered throughout the night, hoping to get one bag of flour. In the early hours of dawn, as the first aid trucks began to enter, an Israeli tank advanced with them, opening fire with machine guns and shells towards the thousands who crowded around the first truck. At the same time, other armored vehicles advanced, their identity concealed by the intense darkness, and began to run over and crush the crowd of people. In the sky, quadcopter drones flew, releasing heavy gunfire for hours, turning aid into bait to kill even more Palestinians who were not yet killed by genocide or starvation. This is the Midstream, and I'm Marwa Osman. The Zionist enemy continues its genocidal war on the Gaza Strip for the 150th consecutive day. Last week, it carried out the horrific flour massacre on Rashid Street, southwest of Gaza City, targeting isolated civilians awaiting the arrival of aid and flour. The toll rose to more than 360 martyrs and wounded. In conjunction with the enemy's massacres and crimes, it continued to broadcast lies and false claims about what happened. The United States, which with its green light that it gave to the Zionist entity and endless support for the aggression, described the incident as serious
and awaited reports on it. To discuss this issue with us from Madrid is Mr. Chema Sanchez, leader of the anti-imperialistas.com group, member of Red Network for the Defense of Humanity, and also self-proclaimed anti-imperialist militant. Thank you very much for being with us, Chema. Now, according to various estimates, there are around 250,000 people in the northern part of the Gaza Strip who are moving between destroyed houses and public buildings in an attempt to find something to eat, something to help their families with, some safe shelter that could protect them. Jordan and Egypt, on the other hand, they did some drop for aids, whether food or any medical aid for that matter, via parachutes, which ended up killing more than 360 Palestinian and wounding others by direct Zionist fire, whether for the trucks or for the parachutes that were landing. Was this an attempt to help the Palestinians for real in the northern part of Gaza, or was it a bait to maybe lure in the physically capable men in northern Gaza to simply kill them because these men are capable of protecting their families in the face of Zionist Israel and in the face of any future Zionist reoccupation of the Gaza Strip?
Well, first of all, thank you for inviting me to this anti-imperialist trend. Certainly any maneuver that even helps or brings closer to the hungry and besieged people will be taken by the Zionists as an opportunity to increase the attacks and their crimes and their genocide of the people, on the people of Gaza. But it is also a formula for laundering, for whitewashing crimes by pretending to be willing to provide aid that had a much simpler, and more rational formula, such as passing the aid without restrictions through the land border of Egypt, but without the intervention of the Israeli siege. Therefore, it's obvious that they use it as a bait or as an excuse. It doesn't matter if it's land, is by land or by sea. They feel unpunished. They feel themselves immune since the international community continues without taking definitive steps in the face of a genocide that is already surpassing the one they use it as a parapet of the Nazis in the Second World War.
Well, Chema, what we saw was definitely something horrific, especially the scenes in the Rashid Street and what followed, because we had more than one flower massacre in the northern part of Gaza because of Zionist Israel and what they say that they are trying to do, when the reality is they are trying to take out as many Palestinians as possible. We see that the danger is now growing, and we see that danger growing while we are approaching the Islamic holy month of Ramadan. And Ramadan is not only known for its sanctity as a month where Muslims fast and do prayers to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, but usually in Palestine in specific, the intensity of the struggle of the Palestinian people escalates during the month of Palestine. Not only in Gaza, we have seen over the years in the West Bank, in Al-Quds, where people try to get to the Al-Aqsa Mosque to pray in Ramadan, but the Zionist entity doesn't allow them. So go figure what would happen this year when the genocide against the people of Gaza is still ongoing. But what really hits me is that despite the despair, the chaos, the pain that is found in Gaza, is that only limited to the holy month of Ramadan? Is despair of the Gaza residents only linked to Ramadan? I mean, if they stop this, if they do a ceasefire in Ramadan, does it mean that it's okay for them to continue after the holy month of Ramadan and keep killing the Palestinians?
Well, I really don't think the Zionists respect any Ramadan or any situation they could approach to a worse conditions for the people of Gaza. The desperation inside obviously grows because even like any seriously injured human being, time always runs against the people. No? And at this moment, the possibilities of this genocide claiming more and more lives grows algorithmically as the days goes by. But also we should not see the situation separately from the global international situation of total war, because Israel continues to be a tool of the empire, a Zionist base at the crossroads of the terrorists, a crossroads of the territories ideal for controlling Asia, Africa and Europe. The war is also becoming more pronounced in Europe and now, and we see the obvious intention coming to unleash a war, a clash against the anti-imperialist bloc in Europe as well. For this reason, we must not stop making a permanent analysis of the global situation to situate this situation in the global situation and understand that the war has more fronts, and not only in Palestine, although Palestine is the center of the war now. But for this reason, maybe all the pressure of the people all around the world make an easier situation for Palestinian people, for Gaza people. But at the same time, this tool, the Zionists, maybe go crazy and go ahead. And then, I'm sorry, but I'm sure the Ramadan will be not a stop for them now. Mm-hmm.
Well, Chema, inside of the Zionist entity, we see that Netanyahu, the prime minister of the Israeli entity, is currently finding himself in such a corner under significant international pressure to stop the genocide against the people of the Gaza Strip, and also with pressure coming from inside the Zionist entity itself. But, I mean, as a Lebanese woman, Chema, we know in Lebanon for sure that nothing really can maintain a ceasefire or a halting or a cessation of violence, acts, aggression from the Zionist entity, except one equation, which is a military deterrence equation against the Zionist entity. Nothing else can work. We have tried this before. So who's to say that the Israeli entity won't just continue to hold the card of starvation against the people of Gaza to ensure that, for example, Hamas doesn't take over again the northern part, at least the northern part of Gaza, in the event of a ceasefire? Who's to say they won't just continue with the killing?
I totally agree with you. Yes, they have no other pressure, really pressure, than the military pressure, the military operations of the resistance. And then at the same time, I think we all are hoping for more people, Arab people and anti-imperialist people summing up to the resistance and making this equation a total loss for the Israel and for Zionists. I think it's important to see that the main character of this equation is not Netanyahu. Netanyahu is no more than the other, no more aggressive than the other of the people in Israel. They are all the same. They are a cancer. They are a disease. They are a curse for all the people in the world. And then they must disappear, totally disappear. And this only has no representative man like Netanyahu. They have a representative entity like the imperialism, like the United States. Israel, Netanyahu are nothing without United States and Europe. And Europe and the United States are now really pressure for genocide. For genocide continues in Gaza, and then they are the real guilty of the equation. Israel is just the cancer, the center of the cancer, but they are not the actor, the main actor. And Netanyahu is only what the United States of America wants to be.
Mm-hmm. Well, Chema, thank you for explaining how much of a tool Zionist Israel is in the hands of the imperialist United States of America and Europe for that matter. Chema Sanchez, leader of the anti-imperialistas.com group, member of the Red Network for the Defense for Humanity, and also self-proclaimed anti-imperialist militant. Thank you for being with us. Now, ladies and gents, please stay tuned, because next we are going to talk about Netanyahu's plan for the day after the war on Gaza.
This is Midstream, and here is IRIB English Radio. Dear listeners, in this weekly program, Marvo Osman discusses two important issues related to West Asia region with two political analysts. Midstream is with you every Friday on IRIB English Radio.
Although Zionist Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's plan for the day after the war is filled with generalities and cannot form the basis of a real plan, maintaining Israeli entity security after the major shock caused by the Al-Aqsa flood has become the primary impetus for Netanyahu to implement his plan. Now, it is for a paramount importance to understand the true motivations behind Netanyahu's presentation of this plan, as this serves as a true gateway to comprehending the actual contents of his plan. More details in the following report.
Israeli entity Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu presented his plan last week before the Zionist War Cabinet for the day after the war in Gaza, based on three time frames. First, the short-term phase, where Netanyahu emphasized the immediate transition to post-war conditions, contingent upon achieving all the war's objectives, which he sees as a prerequisite for entering this phase. Second, medium-term phase, Netanyahu wants the Israeli occupation forces to retrain freedom of military and security action within the Gaza Strip by establishing a security buffer zone along the eastern and northern borders, adjacent to the Gaza Envelope settlements, extending at least 1 kilometer into Gaza's territory. This includes control over the Egyptian-Palestinian borders and the Rafah crossing. Regarding governance and civilian life in Gaza, Netanyahu's plan proposes establishing a civil administration and authority in Gaza under the responsibility of local figures with administrative experience, under Arab or international supervision, not affiliated with the Palestinian resistance factions or the Palestinian Authority. In this phase, the plan includes closing the United Nations Relief and Works Agency for Palestinian Refugees, UNRWA, and replacing it with other international relief organizations that Zionist Israel approves of. Additionally, a plan to combat what Netanyahu called Palestinian extremism is proposed in all educational and religious institutions in the Gaza Strip. The reconstruction of Gaza will be conditional upon the disarmament of the Gaza Strip and the commencement of a campaign against extremism according to Israeli entity standards. For Netanyahu's long-term phase, he outlined two fundamental pillars. Firstly, Zionist Israel rejects any dictates from the international community regarding a final solution with the Palestinians, insisting that direct negotiations between the two parties without preconditions are the only way to achieve a final solution. Secondly, Zionist Israel refuses to unilaterally recognize the establishment of a Palestinian state by the international community. Understanding the true motives behind Netanyahu's plan is crucial for grasping its actual content. Netanyahu seems to have written this failure of a plan to appease the Americans, but its content is aimed at not angering Smotrich and Ben-Gvir. Above all this is undoubtedly Netanyahu's personal political interest in avoiding responsibility for the failure of handling the October 7th Al-Aqsa flood operation and continuing in his role as Prime Minister. Therefore, many in Zionist Israel see Netanyahu's plan as nothing new, but rather a compilation of his statements throughout the Gaza war, continuing the right-wing ideological line based on the idea that reaching a final solution to the conflict with the Palestinians is not beneficial for the Israeli occupation. Thus, his plan continues to pursue a strategy of conflict management by creating facts on the ground to prevent access to a long-term conflict resolution, which Netanyahu views as in Zionist Israel's supreme interest.
Now to discuss this issue with us, Mr. Patrick Henningsen, independent journalist, geopolitical analyst, host of Sunday Wire radio show. And thank you very, very much for your time, Patrick, for being with us. Now, it seems that Netanyahu has in his short, medium and long-term phases looking at reoccupying the Gaza Strip and taking over also the Egyptian-Palestinian borders while installing some sort of a puppet authority similar maybe to the Palestinian authority in the West Bank. That sounds to me like launching a new war all over again in Gaza. What is your take on that?
Well, it's pretty clear, Marwood. This has the full backing of the United States of America. This has been in the works, carefully planned behind the scenes, away from public view. So you have the situation where you have this rhetoric in the public domain from Tony Blinken, from the U.S. State Department, from the President of the United States himself, plus the United Kingdom, the European Union, all talking about some kind of a peaceful solution, some sort of sustainable ceasefire. All the while, they all know very well, full well, of what's going to come. And what's going to come is a plan to basically establish, as you said, some sort of security zone. We know Israel likes its buffer zones. Of course, the people in Lebanon know this all too well, and tragically too. So what we're also seeing here is the fast tracking of settlements, of putting new people on the ground there to change facts on the ground. This process will also begin. But best laid plans of mice and men, Marwa, unfortunately, it may not work to plan. The situation is very different now than it has been in the past, and they're going to come up against heavy resistance, heavy friction. And this is the thing that they fail to calculate time and time again, especially the Israelis' backers in Washington just completely underestimate the axis of resistance. And they've been doing it consistently. And the results are you have a quagmire here that Israel will probably not be able to manage, nor will the United States, who is backing it.
Well, Patrick, during the stage, especially the medium-term stage, Netanyahu's strategy entails shutting down the United Nations Relief and Works Agency for Palestinian Refugees, known as the UNRWA, and substituting it with what he said are alternative international relief organizations, obviously endorsed by Zionist Israel. Now, is that a decision even within the jurisdiction of the Zionist entity to implement? I mean, the UNRWA is, at the end of the day, a UN body. Who's to say that Netanyahu won't simply incarcerate or even kill the UNRWA employees to scare off any form of working with them or dealing with them on the ground in Gaza?
This is the same sort of problem. You have the Israelis working in a sort of area of fantasy land, of non-reality. The UN Relief and Works Agency scandal that Israel accused it of being, you know, infiltrated by Hamas has been completely debunked many times over, and for weeks now, for over a month now. So there's no basis to those accusations to begin with, but you can see the agenda, and I think you see it all too well, that the United States, Israel, they would like to replace the people in key positions. They want to get their own sort of operatives into place on the ground in Gaza. They want to get U.S. agents into place, Western agents into place, people who are allied with the Zionist entity, as it were, into position there. Because as you can see from South Africa's ICJ genocide case, UNRWA was very instrumental in providing the actual data, the actual evidence which implicated Israel in genocide. So they're very upset about this. And of course, from that point on, they basically were on a tirade to try to destroy this UNHC. So it is out of their jurisdiction completely, but they're going to press really hard on this because this is about being able to change facts on the ground, to change the narrative on the ground. You do so by replacing the agencies that used to be responsible for providing aid and relief and then changing all of the staff, changing all of the people in key positions. And basically by doing that, they can totally transform the story in the eyes of the international community and the UN.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know how much they can actually implement such a thing inside of Gaza when the entire population of Gaza is well aware of any foreign agents that could very much try to probably lurk themselves into the societies and the communities of the people of Gaza, especially after the genocide, Patrick. But Netanyahu, in that plan as well, which is basically just audacious of him to put it pen to paper, but he also blatantly proposed a plan to combat what he referred to as Palestinian extremism, wow, in all educational and religious institutions in the Gaza Strip, putting this step as a precondition for the reconstruction of Gaza. Look at that evil mind there. But don't worry about that. What does he suggest here Zionists do about this? I mean, do they want to install imams in the mosques? Do they want to rewrite history just as they did in the West, for example, especially the Palestinian history, change the academic curriculum for the Palestinians? How is that not an extension of the human genocide? This is a cultural genocide.
So this is just, again, more of the same, changing reality, transforming the narrative. They want to de-radicalize, essentially what they're proposing, to de-radicalize an anti-apartheid armed liberation struggle. We've had those throughout history in many different countries, in many different situations, and you cannot erase them, unfortunately, for the occupiers, unfortunately, for colonial oppressors in history. You cannot erase these things. They will persist. So long as the oppression persists, so will the resistance. And we we will remind people that the United Nations and international law recognizes the right to an armed resistance for liberation. They have in South Africa, where these people were demonized for decades for resisting apartheid. And now, look, Nelson Mandela is regarded as a hero, winning the Nobel Peace Prize, and the ANC is in power in South Africa right now. You could very well see the same thing in this situation in the future. So again, they're just tinkering with reality, and it was really doomed to fail because it ignores the real fundamental problems that gave us this crisis to begin with.
We just have one more minute, Patrick, before we end off this segment, and I want to ask you about the real deal with the upcoming proposed ceasefire. Do you think that the Zionist entity will actually approve of any of the points put forth by the resistance? Because Hamas has been very adamant on taking what it should to prevent any further calamity for the Palestinians. Do you think that the Zionist entity will go ahead and begin a ceasefire?
This is classic Israeli negotiation tactics, which everybody knows all too well, is to create an impossible situation where the other side, in this case Hamas, could never agree to terms, and just to carry on trying to implement and execute their agenda. Mm-hmm. And they're not going to stop doing that. And so the ceasefire will become theater to buy time for Israel to change facts on the ground in their favor. Unfortunately, that's what it looks like to us.
Well, Patrick Henningsen, independent journalist, geopolitical analyst, thanks a million for joining us to discuss this pressing issue, especially in the genocided and killed, maimed, betrayed Gaza Strip. As we speak, ladies and gents, thank you very much for joining us right here on the Mideast Stream. Please keep in mind that we will always remain the voice of the voiceless. We'll see you again next week on the Mideast Stream. Assalamu alaikum.
In the limelight.
Gaza.